This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I define grief like a moment of stillness where reality just hit, where the expectations of life shows mm-hmm. up instead of your own expectations
sure.
show up. So for me, it's just a moment where life reminds you to live, to be present in a moment that is taken for you as well to mourn what is and what isn't.
Welcome back. Hi,
back
ladies.
On the couch another day.
Hi, everyone.
Another hair color.
Right.
Another hairstyle.
How y'all feeling, Miss Pixie?
Ooh, it's a vibe. It's a vibe.
Everybody's got a different vibe today.
It's a vibe.
Yeah. But it's good to see y'all.
You too, friend.
Yet another episode of Couch Chronicles.
Yes.
I'm going to get us started with a little bit of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a metta practice today, or others call it loving kindness. Mm-hmm. So you can find a position that is comfortable to you, respectful to your body. Take a moment to notice your body on the surface beneath you. Settle in, make any final adjustments before coming into stillness. You can choose to close your eyes if that feels good to you, or just take a low gaze. And you can place your palms on your thighs face down if you're feeling like you need a bit of grounding, or upward for some openness. Bring your awareness to your breath. And to your body and its connection to the surface beneath you. Start by calling your attention to someone that you may have lost or missed. Haven't connected with in a while. Once you have that person in mind, greet them in a way that is welcoming and consensual, and offer them the following phrases. May you find peace. May you live free from fear. And may you feel your connectedness to all of humanity. After you've offered these phrases, say your farewells to your person and reground yourself. Noticing your body's connection to the surface beneath you. Make note of your breath as it enters and exits your body. Call to attention yourself. Greet yourself in a way that is welcoming and supportive at this time. once you have seen yourself before you, offer yourself the following phrases. May I find peace. May I live free from fear. May I feel my connectedness to all of humanity. Once you've offered these phrases to yourself, sit with any emotions or sensations that may come up for you. Just for a moment. Ground yourself to your breath as it enters and exits your body. Notice your body and the surface underneath you once more. And begin to call into your awareness the community that you surround yourself with. Greet each person in a way that is welcoming and consensual. And once you've greeted everyone, offer them the following phrases. May you find peace. May you live free from fear. And may you feel connectedness to all of humanity. Once you've offered these phrases, say your farewells to your community in a way that people may depart with ease. Begin to ground yourself to the surface beneath you, noticing where your body can connect, noticing your breath once more, taking a few more deep, more intentional breaths here, and begin to invite some movement into the space. You start by moving your wrists, shoulders, head, and when you're ready, you can gently blink your eyes open or raise your gaze. All right. What did you all experience with the love and kindness meditation today?
The soothing of your voice actually was grounding in the beginning because I felt like I needed, my mind was like, whew, whew, whew. So I hone in and made your voice like my anchor. I think there was a heavy sensation on my chest around loving kindness towards myself. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that because kind of squint in a little bit and just had some different thoughts around like embracing and also saying goodbye as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, other than that, I was grounded.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like you were pretty grounded. Yeah. And you noticed your body offered you quite a bit throughout the practice.
For sure.
Glad you're tuned in this morning.
For sure. For sure.
For me, the first part of the exercise where you were instructing us to kind of think of someone immediately came to mind. Then mm-hmm. I started to notice other kind of like people maybe fighting for that spot, if you will. And I just kind of expanded that instead of like choosing or eliminating anyone. I just kind of opened that and included them in the affirmations that we were saying. And then I also noticed when you were saying what sensations are showing up for you, there was a sensation kind of like in my throat, mm-hmm. kind of chest area. Nothing sharp, but just a weighted feeling that I noticed. And I didn't do anything to kind of shift myself mm-hmm. or kind of make it go away in any type of way. I just noticed that and brought myself back to your directive. And then when it came to kind of like directing it to myself, I kind of noticed an image of me walking up to me mm-hmm. And kind of like meeting myself with like warmth, like, hey girl, like a hug is yeah. kind
it's
of what I noticed.
Kindness.
Yeah. Yeah. And feeling a sense of, like you said, just, or excuse me, Jay, as you had said, just like soothing calmness, a weightlessness in mm-hmm. my body, a heaviness in my eyes of like, I could really just sit in this for a really mm-hmm. long time mm-hmm. and, you know, thoughts or excuse me, judgment words like, this is nice. I'm really enjoying this. I could have fallen asleep, showed up for me this today.
Nice. So it sounds like you kind of made the activity work for you in some ways at the mm-hmm. beginning, like mm-hmm. not forcing yourself to choose just one, but just like being open to whatever experience came up
yeah.
and offering some love and kindness to yourself and others.
I do.
Nice.
Thank you. Yeah.
I would definitely say that I kind of had some similar experiences to you all, even though I was instructing the mindfulness. I definitely had quite a few people come to mind, yeah. Particularly around like loss and like people that I miss. Mm-hmm. And I felt like a sense of excitement because mm-hmm. I feel excited to think about those people every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's like,
yeah, yeah.
oh, what a treat. Like you're on my mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially because I mean, obviously you're not here. So
right.
it
right.
feels good to like have them have that thought. Mm-hmm. I also have a feeling like, man, I could do this longer. I could slow down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I also thought about the fact like, this is for the podcast. Because for me, I probably could really do my loving kindness meditation in like 15, 20 minutes.
Mm. Yeah. It's a powerful, yeah. I think, practice to do, especially in moments where, you know, there's a sense of overwhelm mm-hmm. or stress or like that grievance or just grounding.
Grounding, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. You know, that's a favorite.
I find it particularly helpful to offer loving kindness to people that I might be having a difficult time with as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it helps me reground myself to my values.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'm always going to wish you well.
Yeah, that part. For sure. For sure.
Okay, let's get into it. Our pillow talk for the day.
Pillow talk.
Yes. So we're going to talk a little bit about grief. Which
gonna
is
be a little heavy subject.
A heavy
today.
Topic. It is a heavy topic. So I just want to kind of start off first with what is grief? How do we define grief?
I define grief like a moment of stillness where reality just hit, where expectations of life shows mm-hmm. up instead of your own expectations show up. So for me, it's just a moment where life reminds you to live, to be present in a moment that is taken for you as well to mourn what is and what isn't.
Yeah.
Or what was, what wasn't.
I really like that definition, like of the expectation of how mm-hmm. things were in your mind supposed to be versus mm-hmm. how things are. Mm-hmm. There is definitely a level of grief or loss from that.
Yeah.
Whether that is like physical loss or mm-hmm. like a loss of somebody, a death, a change in your life.
Yeah, transition.
Addition mm-hmm. to your life. And I think that having more open conversations about grief can be really helpful because
especially this day and age though, like there's changes, transition, deaths, and war. Like, there's stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody's grieving something mm-hmm. or, some, you know, any situation.
Yeah.
So, like, I would say that grief is a time to sit with loss, a time to mm-hmm. sit with longing, mm-hmm. a time to mourn. So it's just mm-hmm. an experience. Because I feel like it's unfair to say time because time, I guess, insinuates that there's
a limit or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's a period.
Yeah, so
right?
a period, an experience, a process, if you mm-hmm. will, mm-hmm. of dealing with loss, dealing with change, dealing with an uprooting, if you will, that comes with death that comes with just like life transitions. Because at times, like sometimes grieving adolescence, grieving a time when you didn't have as many responsibilities is not something that is talked about as much. And that can be just as impactful, right? There's even like a developmental stage, right? Like the midlife crisis. Everyone talks about like you know, that, where people are often looking back at what life used to be. And that is grief. That is loss, you know, of that juvenile freedom or perceived freedom.
That part, right? Because it's always like, you know, things are always like, you know, feel better.
The perception
than,
of it,
you know, what it is.
Or when I had this person, things were more stable. I knew who I was before. So it, I think oftentimes grief is an acceptance of constant change.
Yeah, for sure.
We're gonna get a little vulnerable here, y'all.
We are.
What is what was your like kind of first experience with grief that you can recall?
That one I will never forget. It was my best friend who passed away in a car accident, and the way it you know, you've had family members like who passed, but you had no relationship with them. But to have someone so close to you, one night you talking to them, a couple hours later, you're getting this like leery call. And I've never experienced it. So I remember going, I mean, it cut me deep in the terms of, I think that's the first time my body experienced a shock and a trauma where I ended up losing a lot of weight too, because I just was frozen in time. And I remember become obsessed in understanding death. And I was, he passed away, I think I was either 24 or 25. We were around the, he was a year older than me. So we were around the same age. I was in my 20s. I was pretty young at the time. And I remember become obsessed with understanding death and understanding what happened to you. So I'm someone, like you guys know, if I don't know something, I'm gonna
read
all about it. So it wasn't like the spiritual aspect didn't kick in for me around until that time too, coincidentally, because I told you I grew up Catholic, but you know, that wasn't
didn't
my religion.
Feel attached to
so
that,
there was no connection for me there. But it was this obsession to understand what happened, where is this, why is like, what is death, where do you go after it, and really didn't take to my emotions. I don't think I took heed to my emotions around experiencing the loss of him instead of understanding the loss of him. And it wasn't until maybe like 3 months later, I'm driving to like work and I had this complete breakdown and relief. And
I like that you said relief.
Yeah, it was tightness. It was relief.
Because you needed to let that go.
I needed, and I didn't even know. And then crazy enough, he showed up in my dream while I was like on vacation, and I was like, you're dead though. And it's like, he wasn't even listening, but it was weird. And I think that dream and that relief gave me the peace to kind of like accept death as part of life instead of having this resentment around death and losing someone or this fear. Cause I was, it became a fear of mine too.
And
the way that it happened.
Would you say then that your kind of exploration for knowledge was your way of trying to conquer that fear? Because
for sure, conquer and understand. I think when you're young, you hear your parents grieve and things like that, but you don't understand or conceptualize what is death. I don't know, because I felt invincible until that point. Because I was adventurous, I was a risk taker, you know, that type of thing. That I feel like made me realize stuff can happen to you, you know?
Like, I feel like grief definitely gets you in contact with your humanity. How like fragile and finite life can be.
Exactly.
Right? And like, it's so interesting that it wasn't until you weren't in that place of seeking knowledge that that woosah and that release kind of came to you.
Sometimes looking for the answers can almost be like an avoidance behavior.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you're chasing something to make how you're feeling
make sense
tangible.
Of what I don't
instead
understand.
Instead of just
experience it. Because we all want to make sense of the things that we don't understand. And learning to accept there's a lot of things in life, there's no explanation for it and there's no understanding of it. And I think that's the biggest thing I've learned around like grieving and losing someone through death is that it's a natural occurrence. And what's crazy is, RIP Danny, he's like the best. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that in moments of distress, because he was comfort for me, or if I'm having like a rough thing, he'll pop up in my dreams like random. So that became a sense of comfort, knowing that in my dreams or in my thoughts, his spirit is still present.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's really interesting. I would say that my first experience, I was a bit younger.
Yeah.
I was in third grade, and one of my classmates got into a really bad car accident and died. Mm. At the time, I went to a Catholic school, but we were not Catholic. I grew up SDA, Seventh-day Adventist. Mm-hmm. So we had a mosque for him, and like I remember like our class was like sitting on a row, and we were like kneeling down, and I was so emotional. Like I was crying all morning.
Yeah.
I was crying during the mosque, and my mom looked over at me, and she was like, "We don't cry or mourn the dead. Like that's like a place of peace for them." I think I felt so invalidated by that.
Yeah.
And didn't even really realize that, like, after that, I kind of like stifled. Like, I would like, oh, I can't show up in a certain way.
Yeah.
I think that is like one of the things that was like, no, you're not supposed to cry for things. But, and I do know that, like, my mom's intentions were more in a space of like her faith and like her beliefs.
Yeah, letting you understand, like,
I didn't receive it that way.
Yeah,
because I'm like, here I am,
in
the third grade, like my classmates,
right?
I'm a kid,
right?
And you want me to understand a concept as
that
great
not,
as like
your brain did not
rest
develop
is
for that.
Peace. Yeah. I'm like, girl, what? We went to class yesterday.
Right.
That's also another thing,
and
too.
And that's traumatic within itself.
Yeah, right. Like, that's just how to handle it.
The
like,
quickness
knowing
of how things of, like, this person was here, or abruptness. This person is here versus not. Versus, you said, your mom being older, and probably someone who's had more experiences
with loss.
And death in the different tiers that it comes with. That is an example of kind of, like, expected invalidation that happens between an adult and a child, because they just are so removed from that initial shock.
Right.
As if, what's it called, like, no, not even if. Most people have experienced some level of loss. If it's, and it does not need to include someone dying.
Right,
You know, so I think that, like, adults at that point have kind of like desensitized themselves in certain ways. And so when your child is experiencing it, it is so uncomfortable. And I think oftentimes like unearth things and like that we have yet to really
tackle
and get through. And so it's just a lot easier to like, let's just chill, like calm that down instead of like, wondering what is this kind of bringing up in me, and why do I want to put it down so badly? You know, so my first experience with death happened when I was, I want to say I was 9 years old. So my sister had a heart defect, and she was born with Down syndrome. And so there was a lot in the her 4 years of life, because she died when she was about 4 years old. My mom was very much caught up in things with her. They were in and out of the hospital. My mom would be away from, and from my mind, I can't even really tell if it was actually as long as it felt or if it was just, it would feel like she was gone for like a week, 2 weeks, like I wouldn't see her, like type of stuff, and she would be working or be at the hospital. So I remember like when my sister had several surgeries, and I think this is one of the complications after one of her surgeries, and so she passed away. And I remember my mom, like the I still remember the scene like to this day. It was in our one of the first apartments that I remember us living in, that was in Maryland, in Gaithersburg over here. And I remember us sitting in the apartment, and my mom, like, not necessarily, like, I can't even remember if she had any emotion on her face, but I remember that my dad was kind of, like, not crying, but you could see there was, like, a certain sadness. And so you just kind of, like, you can tell something's, like,
off.
Okay. So then they say, and even now that I'm even recalling, I can't even really hear, like, what she said, but it was, your sister is not here. And I immediately, my siblings, the rest of them, my brother's crying, my sister's crying, like, I don't even like cry at all. Mm-hmm. I'm just like sitting there and I'm just seeing everyone else. So I immediately, feel myself like jump up and like go into the room and I just start bawling. Like, so like already, what am I, 9 years old?
You dismissed yourself.
I'm already like, I can't cry in here in front of all these people. Let me, what's it called, go into the room. And I remember my dad coming in and like consoling me and like me just like, crying even more. And I can even feel like myself talking about it now, how uncomfortable I feel about him like
holding,
like coming and then holding more, because I felt a lot of guilt like around my like sister passing, because a part of me felt like finally I get my mom back, but then it's like feel bad for feeling that way. Like how could you feel that way about someone that was struggling so badly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Take a deep breath. Yeah, yeah. We know this was gonna. Well, you know, here is the thing about that, right? In a sense of, as a child, we don't understand certain concepts. Just like Tyler was saying, Mom was trying to get her to understand the concept of, no, your friend is in a good place. At the third grade, she's not gonna understand heaven. All of that. She just knows she was playing with her friend and her friend is gone. For you as a child, because your sister had was so medically fragile, you parented yourself. You went, as a first child, you had this one-on-one connection with your mom where it was you and your mom. Okay, and then your, you know, your brother came. And then, so it was one of those things where your world started changing and you couldn't understand why. And most of the time, parents don't really explain to us or take the time to explain why.
I mean, she had a lot of stuff going on.
You, it's in a sense of, I yearn for you. And at the same time, you also, though you know your mom is grieving, but you also felt the sense that, I know you're tired.
Sure.
Maybe now she can get a break. You don't conceptualize it, but maybe there'll be a break. Right.
Yeah, and I mean, all of those things are true, but in that, for a, like you said, a 9-year-old, 10-year-old brain, like I just felt so bad, badly about like how all the different things that I felt. And it's so interesting because I think I don't necessarily feel like the grief of losing my sister ever actually like had the ability to fully like run its course, because the guilt that I felt for even feeling the things, like I was like drowning in that as like a child. And I even just remember myself just like going through, like after that initial moment of like crying, I can't even imagine, like recollect myself crying again about that situation.
Yeah.
And I,
it wasn't until probably like the years ago.
I mean several, and it was had to do with like non, like loss.
Yeah.
Right.
Death.
That came
out. That really, I feel like, unearthed.
Yeah, because I remember the first time you told me about it.
A lot of stuff.
It seems like every time you talk about it, you uncover something different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, that's kind of how the grief felt. And I feel like a lot of people might have a similar experience of maybe losing someone. I think about like people who have are caretakers to long-term illness or, you know, ailing parents, how when they finally pass, there's a relief and there's grief, but then there's also guilt
a change in
about
routine.
Then feeling relief about those things. Like then there's the survivor's guilt. So we'll talk a bit more about that, but that was our first experience.
I think I kind of heard like different, in each of our stories, I also kind of heard some different levels of grief.
Yeah.
Just around like changes in your family dynamic. There's a level of grief around that too.
Yeah.
Like, what does this mean for like how we're all going to navigate things?
Yeah, for sure.
Changes in our classroom dynamics.
Yeah.
Changes in like your life and routine around like who would be comforting to you. So just trying to like expand that idea of grief. Like it is really not just, well, perhaps it starts with the death of something.
Right.
Yeah.
But it really kind of digs deep into like each aspect of your life.
I like that you said that, a death of something, an emptiness, a, what's it called, a breakdown of something. Because I often think that after that, There was a little bit of time between when I experienced like a natural death again, but mm-hmm. I did experience a lot of like loss of friendship. Mm-hmm. You know, like also like maybe moving and having feeling like I needed to like reestablish friendships or mm-hmm. yeah. my like very close, like best friends, losing best friends and like a certain numbness that I think that I started to naturally just kind of like take in around losing people. Like it's just kind of yeah. like, well, this is just what happens. Like this yeah. is just kind of like.
Yeah, it kind of causes you to harden in some
yeah,
way.
Like yeah. kind of like what your mom like yeah. did where like, well, we celebrate. It was just kind of like a thing of like, well, people kind of come in and out of your life. Like, and sometimes yeah. they're there for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're not. And yeah. that was all good and well until I had a friendship of like almost 10 years just disappear in front of my face mm-hmm. and along with a bunch of other things. And that just floored me. Like I was yeah. leveled for a good little
yeah.
second yeah. around that one. Cause that was very unexpected. Like yeah. even sure. though I had like that rule created in the back of my mind around loss and just how people come in and out of your life as like mm-hmm. a protection, mm-hmm. still feeling quite devastated about yeah. this particular friendship just going awry.
I think that that's like a good, like, or like a helpful indication around those dialectics. Both yeah. of those things absolutely exist at once.
Yeah.
People definitely come and go. Changes are only constant. Like things will happen, things will change.
Yeah.
And it's okay for you to still experience the feelings yes, that are aligned
that
with
you
that.
Feel. Yeah.
For sure, for sure. Yeah. How do you all think that grief has impacted like your work life?
I'm very empathetic to people who experience grief, and I'm very aware of when my clients are aggressively avoiding mm-hmm. grief. I mean, I can think of a lot of clients who don't want to talk about tumultuous relationships with parents, like
yeah.
parents who were estranged, who then returned back into the life. There's mm-hmm. this kind of like, it's fine, it's okay, like it's good kind of, you know, situation. Yeah. I have clients dealing with fertility, you know, concerns right. and issues, and kind of this thing of like, let's just roll through
move
the punches, like
it.
Let's just
yeah.
move on to the next thing, as if not each round that does not lead to conception mm-hmm. is not
a grief,
right? Yeah. Not a loss, not yeah. a death of yeah. something
yeah.
of
a
what could be,
and what could have been,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
You
yeah.
know, so I think that that's how it impacts me. Is I'm mm-hmm. very just empathetic and very like wanting my clients to have a soft space to really explore that.
Yeah. I make a space for grief intentionally in my practice. And I make a space for it not only for death, but for all aspects of a mm-hmm. client's life. Mm-hmm. And I walk them to what I call, like most of the time with clients, like a narrative of their expectation and also walking away from that expectation. And what does that look like? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's so funny you talk about a parent, because I had a session with a client called for an emergency session yesterday, and it was regarding a boundary they had with a parental parent, and the parent crossed that boundary, and it was like the straw that broke the camel's back, and there's guilt and shame and extreme sadness over, okay, how do I need to let go of this mother that I
the
expected and compared to this mother that I'm getting.
Because yeah.
we had talked about it before. And I was like, I work with it. And then the question became, which I thought was powerful, was what is it about me? And I had to let them understand, it's like, it's interesting that you believe that it was you. But what I'm also hearing is that mom also was not, is in a place herself
sure.
where she can't see herself. Therefore, she can't see you in the way that you want to be seen. Mm-hmm. So let's not, you know, I try to teach people now, let's not take other people's experiences. And that includes the adults that we respect in our lives, the biological people we're connected to, and make it into our own experience. Mm-hmm. Does their experience affect us to a capacity? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A parent's experience does affect you to a capacity. And when you get the voice and the courage enough to separate yourself from it, mm-hmm. embrace that. Because this is the part where I'm gonna let you experience your life respectfully the way that you want to. And I have to find comfort and for myself in the life and the community that I created that may be non-biological. Mm-hmm. Meaning that you would never stop being my mother biologically. And at the same
time, there's things I need that you don't have.
There's things that I need that I'm gonna radically accept that you cannot provide for me. And I'm gonna free myself for the judgments I have against you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a big level of grief around that too. Like letting go of what you thought things would be or what you felt things should be.
What I deserve. I often hear that language about what I deserve. And I agree with you. It's like, you do deserve. Everyone deserves
absolutely
those things. And unfortunately, a lot of us don't receive the things that we ultimately believe we need
in order for us to... Yeah, and people can't give you what they don't have. Everybody is walking around with their own stuff.
Yeah.
So people can't give it to you if they don't have it.
And I call it shedding expectations. Sometimes we need to shed the expectations that we have of ourselves and of others. Yeah. Because sometimes we're asking people to give us things that we are comparing and seeing other people experience, not us ourselves have experience. Yeah. Because sometimes it is reconnecting to, okay, let's look at the mother that you actually had. Where does this mother that you are seeking come from? This idea of
Has that been
right, this idea of come from? Because comparison is the enemy, as I like to call it. Right, it is, because you see other, and then it's like, well, I see how other people are with their parents. Yeah. You do see that, and it's not your own experience. Not to take to say that you can't appreciate that, that you also have to take in what has my experience with my world has been, and what would I like to create and cultivate for myself outside of what I feel this should be.
Yeah, and that goes in contact with thinking about like, what do I do with my grief? People often want to eliminate grief, right? Have like not experience it anymore.
Because it's uncomfortable. And I think that it's very human nature, and like there's value in wanting to protect yourself from like the feelings that come along.
That come with those things at the same
time. How about the idea of wasted time? Some people feel like if I spend too much time on this,
That's interesting that you say that, because I think the original question that we asked was around like how a grief impacts your work. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, like I have experienced like almost an accelerated amount of grief since like 2019. I've lost like maybe someone every couple of months, honestly, and my family members. So that has been like
that you're close to too.
These
are not just people that
like my grandparents,
your brother.
My grandparents, my godbrother, friends. So it's been like an almost like an accelerated course in how to figure it out, because I think that there had been kind of like a big amount of time between my first experience of death loss and like the death of people like in my post career. I think that for me, I had to really figure out how to balance my own grief with my client's grief, because I found myself, and not even just for clients, but also just the community that I support. For like my family members, my friends, I found myself really trying to like bury my feelings. Like I'm like, I don't have space because my job needs me. I need to be able to support myself as an adult and make money, sure. My family members need me, or like my godparents lost a son, so their grief is more important or bigger than mine. And I found myself feeling so like...
minimizing your
experience. I minimized my experience, but I also like was heavily engaged in avoidance behavior.
Because there's no way for you to keep that up if you're not avoiding. There's no way, because grief reminds you every day of who or what is
not
here. Like, and it will remind you in the most
vulnerable.
It, not even vulnerable. I would say like the most evasive, random kind of like times where you'll just be existing and all of a sudden, bam,
something
you feel those
you.
Things. So that makes me think about then like, what do we do? Because grief is not like any other emotion where you can work through. I remember like reading this or listening to this man who said that grief is like an arrow that has no target. So it is just
happening.
Just happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts around how people can process grief in an ongoing way?
I would say the number one thing for me is not being able to talk and not being afraid to talk about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think like, and being able to talk about it or find some community where it's room for everybody's grief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And being okay with like the changes in your capacity around loss. Mm-hmm. Like loss is a huge vulnerability. That includes like change, transition, changes in friendships, jobs. Death, like that is a huge vulnerability for being able to like regulate yourself and get back into your life. I think the thing that really helped me is that I had my supervisor, my clinical supervisor. I think it was maybe like a week. I took like a week off after my godbrother passed, and then I came back the next week and she looked at me and she was just like, why do you want to get back to work so quickly? And I was like, I had to have somebody to say, like, girl, it's you can slow down. Like, it's okay. I needed that permission.
Give you that
I think
permission.
Even when my grandma passed, I think Jay is the person that I talked to. And she was like, yeah, girl, like, don't come to work.
No. Yeah.
And some of those, that is a learned thing of just, like, putting your head down and just working through stuff. And I think a lot of people in the Black community, in the Latinx community, and a lot of
because life
minorities.
Goes on.
Yeah.
It does. Life goes on, but also there is a lot of pressure from your community to
keep going.
Moving and keep going. Because oftentimes as women, there's a lot of people who are dependent on us. I think often my mom, who's experienced so much loss in her life, like people often are like, why are you even sad? If you've lost as many people as she has lost,
especially a child,
why would you not feel lost? Like, why would you not feel sad?
Well, that's
sad?
How it is for my best friend's mom. She experienced loss, but when you lose a child,
that's
it has
not
a different spin to your life. Like, till this day, she goes to the cemetery, y'all. Like,
and that's
faithfully.
And speaking of what I was talking about before, that's a ritual.
Yeah.
Rituals are really, really important when we're talking about like remembering and celebrating our lost ones, or even like loss in general. So, visiting the site that you buried someone, praying, opening yourself in your dream state to that person.
I make sweet potato pie every year.
That one's to honor. I think
and
about,
they're good,
Chan. They're delicious.
I
also think about like, there's this thing where, you know, for people who have complex relationships with the people who passed, writing things that you feel regret about as it relates to this person, writing maybe some resentments that you kind of can think about, and then also some things that you appreciate. And every time that those feelings of grief show up, kind of repeat this exercise as a way to kind of honor the wholeness of this person.
That honoring piece is important, right? Like I honor every time I think about a person, whether it's a happy memory or a painful one, I honor that I had the opportunity to think about you.
Like I'm just thankful for this, regardless of what it was.
Yeah.
So
mine is make time.
Yeah.
I, to your point, instead of, you gotta make time when the moment is happening. There's not a day that goes, I don't think about Danny or my grandmother, and you know, my best friend just lost her mom and we had a really nice relationship and even being around her. So when you are having those moments, it's just making time instead of trying to rush and being like, okay, get over this. No, make time. That day may not be the day you want to go to work. That day may not be the day where you keep the activities you had for the day. And it doesn't mean you weep in sorrow and so forth. No, you allow your body to experience what's happening, whatever that is, right? If it's crying is purging and cleansing. So let that happen. If it's a memory or a thought or a moment, like you said, go do that thing that honors that person, right? Or if it's just journaling the thought that, hey, I had the thought of you, experience it. If it happened while you're in the car, pull over. make time for it. Don't do the push through.
Yeah.
The push through is just an invalidating of the experience you're having, which will in turn intensify it.
It'll show up
and it's
going to
show up somewhere else, and it's going to show up more. Mm-hmm. So make time for your for that moment mm-hmm. when it's happening, because it's grief is ongoing, right? You don't move on. It doesn't end, right? So because it doesn't end, it's infinite, right? So therefore, yeah. at any point when it shows itself, it's your body's way of saying, hey,
right, it's time for us to pause. It's yes. time for us to slow down.
Let's acknowledge.
Yeah.
Let's make room for it. Because I was forced to do that.
Yeah. So. I would say with a final note, grief is painful enough. Experience mm-hmm. the pain, but suffering occurs when mm-hmm. we dismiss, minimize, and don't kind of acknowledge what is. So yeah. let's not make ourselves suffer.
And I would also say, because since this is like a really deep and long topic, I would like for us to kind of make time to talk about
other
different
forms.
Types, different yeah. forms of grief
yeah.
that especially now that other people might be experiencing. But this was, yeah. all, this was definitely
this is nice. So we can wrap it up. I appreciate right. this conversation. I
Thanks,
need to
guys.
Take
Thank
off
you.
On the 17th.
Yes.
yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
All right, guys. Bye. I'm Stephanie.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Sparkle Ty.
See ya.